3, 2, 1, it's Shazam!
The podcast that hopes to make itself obsolete.
I'm Kayla.
I'm Carissa, and
today we are getting judgy.
Super judgy.
We wrote that sentence.
Yeah, 6 months ago.
Yay!
What are you up to this week, Kayla?
Well, Robot Carissa, I am now the tired one of the two of us.
Yeah, that's nice.
Well, I had a fun sleeping adventure, which is Harrison, Bowie, and I were up pretty late watching the Umbrella something something on Netflix about a bunch of kids who have weird and very sometimes useless superpowers.
Oh, God.
And so we've been watching that, and we fell asleep to it last night. And then Harrison so kindly woke me up at about 2:30 in the morning. I was like, do you want to go? And I just refused to move from the couch, and I had a very warm and snuggly dog on me. And I was like, I'm asleep here. It's going to be great. He's going crazy right now. And then Bowie... Bowie, we're trying to record a podcast. We're trying to save the world.
All right.
Thank you, Bowie. So Bowie and I snuggled on the couch, and then pretty consistently throughout the evening, he kept waking me up.
Oh.
And then and I don't think he was feeling well. And then finally at about 8 o'clock in the morning, he woke up, and I knew something was weird. And without just a couple of seconds of looking at him going, what is happening right now? He then needed to throw up. And so I got him off the couch. So he didn't throw up on the couch, which in that moment I'm like, well, I'm going to move you. The couch is, I just washed the couch. And then he threw up the outer fabric to my microwavable heating pad that he ate 2 weeks ago, and he ate. Bowie ate both of my microwavable heating pads. One of them was this black fabric with rainbow music notes on it, and the other one was blue fabric with a bunch of sports balls, like basketballs, volleyballs, soccer balls. And he ate both of them, and just threw up the black fabric one, which he ate 2 weeks ago, and then immediately felt better. And now here we are.
Now he's got his head lovingly resting on your leg while the rest of his body is on my back.
Yep. That's a Bowie.
This is how we record the podcast, draped in dog.
Yep. Worth it. How are you, Carissa?
I'm good. I got to go to the castle last night. Woo-hoo! And see by far the best palace show I've ever seen. Ooh. Which was Dave Kovac hosting.
Love Dave Kovac.
Oh, he was so great. And he did the line last night of Everyone Goes Back a Hero.
Oh,
he did
yay!
It in the show. Great. So love him.
Yep.
And then marionettes, and then this FISM kid. Man, that was a good show.
Yeah.
That was a great show last night. So I'm just – when you see a really good show, like a really good show, really good magic show, I am left always with three feelings. One, man, I love magic. That's so great. Two, is magic real? Like just for a second, you just kind of go, wait, is magic maybe real? I forgot. And then the other is, I'm garbage. So those are sort of my three overwhelming feelings is, you know, magic is amazing. It could be real. Also, I'm – a garbage person and a garbage performer, because that's how you should feel when you see a good show.
You're absolutely. Like, watching a magic show doesn't make you want to quit, it's not good. Yeah. That's how I truly feel.
Agreed. Yep. So this is a perfect segue. today we're going to be talking about giving and receiving effective critique.
Ooh.
Ooh. Now we should, as a caveat, we should say we have tried to record this episode.
Yeah, we were looking back at our notes. Is this go number four?
This is our fourth attempt.
Which it's never going to come out. we looked back at our notes on this, and it is actually called episode 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're still writing like our intro.
Yeah, we're still trying to figure out how we introduce the show.
Right. Which is great. And then we have an outro written as well, which I'm absolutely going to read because it is of such terrible quality.
Yeah, we've gotten way better at making these podcasts. It's really we're going back through the notes and going, oh, this is what we thought people would listen to.
Right. Which is very exciting. So,
oh my goodness.
That's exactly what I'm going to say when we close this episode.
This is how, and for the record, our closing statement.
Don't say it. I'm going to say it.
I'm not saying it. I'm just saying afterwards it's followed by one of us writing, yes, because we thought it was so great.
Yeah, it felt really good.
We've come a long way in 6 months. I hope. So we're going to talk about critique today. And it's sort of perfect timing, I think, as well, because we just did one about, you know, volunteer stuff. And we've seen a lot of good and bad shows. And we've been kind of critiquing things lately. And so we want to talk a little bit about effective critique and how to give it, how to take it, all that info. It's going to be good.
I wish one of us had learned a lot about critique, maybe in a school, potentially about art.
An art school. Well, neither of us ever went to art school. And we certainly don't – one of us didn't go to the Alberta College of Art and Design, which, by the way, is no longer a college. It is now a university.
Ooh. Yes. My college is now no longer existent.
Oh, boy.
Tell me about art school.
So
well, our schools went in the opposite direction. One upgraded so well and the other – disintegrated.
Yeah, unfortunately, art school is like not, you know, it doesn't necessarily make doctors or anything. So it's like it's a university where you can learn to weave fabric. But art is valuable.
Do you have school debt?
Oh, yeah, I still have school debt.
Oh, for weaving?
Yeah.
We should make a phone call. I'm quitting magic and getting into the school debt business. Yeah. Like, how many kids want to go to school for weaving? All of them.
Still owe 10% of my student loan. And yes, I did study fabric weaving on a loom. That's useful. So the first year of art school, you do a lot of work on critique.
I want to know so much more about this loom.
Oh, man. It's terrible. It was my least favorite part of art school. It's so tedious to set up.
No, this is my favorite thing.
Never want to, you know, although recently I was at a friend's house and she has like a easier loom where it's like a more, it does a lot of the work for you. So now I might actually like weave some fabric. This is a weird conversation.
I love it.
I've
learned more in the last 30 seconds than I have in the 6 months Shazam has been
about me, about how ridiculous a person I am
in general.
Yeah. So, the first year of art school, they really focus heavily on developing healthy critique, language for critique, recognizing certain things. And I am overwhelmed to see how little of that exists in magic. You see it a bit in, you know, dance or theater. You see these elements. You certainly see it in comedy, you know, sketch comedy. The first time we recorded this, we had Harrison help us out. And so that he could talk about like his work with the Groundlings and the way that they do critique. But then that episode didn't turn out because we were bad at making episodes at that point.
And then we recorded this two more times and they were just gone.
We just lost them.
Yes. And the effective critique that I received was, hey, save the audio.
Yeah, don't throw stuff out just because you think you're done with it. So in that first year, the work that we do and sort of how it teaches you to think about your art is so valuable and it makes it much easier to become a better artist. So we're going to go over some of that right now. So the first thing you learn is you are not your work.
What?
Yes, that's very, very important. I think a lot of people, when they, especially because as a performer, you're standing on stage as yourself often, especially if you're not doing a character. And so you feel like you're showing people you. And if they don't like it, then they don't like you. And that's a really unhealthy way to look at it because if you are, let's say you're, you know, you make widgets and you made a bad widget, that doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean you're a terrible human being. That just means you made a bad widget. It might not even mean you're a bad widget maker. It just means that you made a bad widget. And so that's very, very important to recognize is that you –
a widget is a small gadget or mechanical device, especially one whose name is unknown or unspecified. Or an application or a component of an interface that enables a user to perform a function or access a service. Widget.
Thank you.
Noun. Informal.
Thank you, Kayla.
I didn't know what a widget was.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's now talk about like you're making your show. Your show is your widget. So let's say you put together a piece of magic. It's a stand-up routine. It's a torn or destroyed newspaper. And you flash when you do it, and it's unoriginal, and it's kind of boring, and it's bad. This does not mean you're a bad magician. This does not mean you're a bad person. This means you did a bad thing. You yeah. Maybe the writing is bad, or maybe that particular show is bad.
Like, let's say that you wanted to do a cardiographic notepad where cardiography, what's that trick called?
I think cardiographic is correct.
Where, you know, where you draw a picture and the card comes, it's a rising deck, but on a notepad. And let's say you chose to do Copperfield's exact routine. We literally just watched a video of a magician doing this routine almost sentence for sentence.
Tim Ellis just sent us a little video and we were like, no.
I'm still mad about it. You know what? Like, my critique to you is, hey, you're not that routine. Yeah. Because one, it's not yours. But two, it's not very good anymore. So let's move past it. Also, stop fake kissing people. Stop asking people to kiss you on the cheek and then sneak around to give them a kiss. Anyway, that's my critique for you. You're not your work, but that's because you're stealing other people's.
Yeah. I think we should say that Tim Ellis sent us the video. It's not a video of Tim Ellis. He just sent us video of another performer.
Correct.
That's doing
– we've started calling people out by name on this podcast.
No, we have not. We don't do that. But we could, but we don't. So that's sort of the first thing, is it's really important to recognize that you are not your work, that and other people are not their work. So when you meet – and this happens all the time, is you meet somebody and they're nice and you like them and they're lovely, and then you see their show and you go, ugh, your show is bad, and that sucks. Or vice versa, like they're a bad, terrible person, and then you see the show and you're like, darn it, their show is super good.
So good.
So that's an important first thing, and it's important to internalize that and recognize that someone can come up to you and give you notes on your show, and they're not giving you notes on your personality. And that's not always the clearest, because often what they're saying is like, you dress frumpy and you're got a weird face. And those are things that are also about you. But it's, you need that emotional distance in order to be able to receive healthy critique and give healthy critique. The other thing is that everybody has a bad day. And it's only a real failure if you don't learn anything from your bad day. If you have a bad day, if you have a bad day on stage, or you mess up, or like an audience member does something and it throws you or whatever, that's fine. I mean, it happens to all of us. But if that happens and you don't turn that into information you can use to not let that happen in the future, if that happens a lot or even more than once, that's the failure, when you're not learning from your mistakes. Because every show should be – you should learn a little bit more and get a little bit better. Because if you're not, you're just going to stagnate. And we see that happen with performers all the time. And we talked about this in kind of our Why Women Are Terrible episode, is that if you're given a lot of positive feedback and no real critique for a long time, you start to assume, oh, I'm done. My act is perfect. I don't have to learn anymore. And then you shut yourself down to that kind of information and you don't get any better, because the truth is anyone can get better. Every act could be a little more polished, could have just like a like better time and just like little bits. And unfortunately at the top, those changes, those corrections, that ability to polish it up, you know, that polish becomes more and more minor. You see that with sandpaper. There's different grits of sandpaper. When you are on the low grit, when you're like big, you know, sand on your sandpaper, you're doing a lot of work, you're taking a lot of layers off. But once you get into that fine sandpaper where you're trying to get that high polish, it between layers of sandpaper, you're making very little difference. But that doesn't mean those aren't essential elements to getting like a high polished act. Does that metaphor resonate with you at all, or did I just say something insane?
No, I mean I just use a Dremel.
That's the next t-shirt. Kayla Drescher. I just use the Dremel. Yeah, that's pretty smart. So these things are really, really important when you start, just at the beginning, just getting into taking and receiving critique, the idea that you need some emotional distance between your work and yourself, and also the idea that everyone has a bad day, everyone's going to have a bad show. A bad show doesn't mean you're a bad performer, but the goal here is to learn a little bit from every show you do, and use every piece of information, every single time you fail, to move forward and get better and tighter and cleaner and more bulletproof. So gross. It's on your sweater. Yuck.
Bowie, no. Where is it?
Oh, I think it's also here.
Oh, it's actually not the pen. It's gone.
So one of the things
we're doing
a podcast of critique. This is going to be unusable, this one as well.
We're never going to get this episode
never.
Out.
So one of the things I started doing a little while ago as a practice for myself is that I have a bad habit. I talked about this on the Women Are Terrible episode a little bit. But I have a bad habit of going, or used to, of telling people, your show is great. And
oh, don't do that.
Don't do that. I realized a few years ago how incredibly harmful that is. Because if you say a show is great, then that person is not – you're lying to someone because maybe their show isn't great. And those words like it's great, it's fun, those are empty words. They don't have anything in them mm-hmm. that the performer can learn from. I mean, it's different. Sometimes you see an act and they're amazing and they're like your favorite performer and all you can go is, oh, you're so great and I hate you. And that's a different thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're just giving people these like empty pieces of information when they genuinely ask for critique, you're not really helping anyone. So a couple years ago, I decided I wasn't going to lie to people about their show anymore. I wasn't going to tell people, hey, they were great when they weren't great. So instead, if I feel like someone's fishing for a compliment – and ugh. I don't really have one for them, which happens in entertainment all the time.
All the time.
I will find something really specific I liked and then say, I'd love more of that, which is kind of a critique. It's kind of a sneaky critique where it's like, oh, you know, you did this really well and I appreciated that. And, you know, I'd love to see more of that or whatever it is. Because, you know, the other thing is when people come up to you and they're like, what'd you think? A lot of the time they're not asking.
That's not asking for critique.
That's not asking for notes. That's not someone going, hey, tear my show apart. They're going, hey, I'm feeling vulnerable. Can you be nice to me? And I want to do that. I want to give them that validation. But I also think it's very important for me that I don't lie.
Right. We'll kind of talk more maybe about this when we talk about and asking for critique. But my personal approach to asking and giving is that I very rarely will ask someone, especially like while I'm in the middle of doing shows or after shows or whatever. I just can't like – I can't sit and absorb information if I still have to go do another show.
Yeah.
So I don't ask. But I also don't go, did you have fun? Did you enjoy the show? Like I don't ask that. I don't even ask that to non-magicians that come because it's not – the only answer to that is yes or no. So they're probably going to go, yes, I did enjoy the show. Yes, I did have fun. They're not going to go, no, not really, unless it was absolutely garbage, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's like a normal audience member.
Totally.
And so if you're going to ask for feedback, it needs to be something that can actually be quantitative and measured, right? You can't just go, oh, I have a new goal and my goal is to work out more. Well, what does that actually mean? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I want to go to the gym 3 days a week. Well, that's like a measurable goal, right? So when you are deciding that you like want to have feedback, you need to ask for something that's measurable. You can't just ask for a yes or no, you know, answer. But then in that regard, basically stop asking me if I had a good time because I'm not going to – You don't want me to answer that because I will tell you if I did not have a good time. But if you're going to go, did you enjoy the show? Did you have fun? Then I'm going to go, yeah, fun show. That doesn't help you at all. And stop fishing for just a compliment. Either ask me for actual feedback, which you might not want my feedback. We might not have the same sensibilities as performers, and that's totally fine. I take none of that personally. We're just not the same style, so you don't need my feedback. But if you're going to ask, if you want me to give feedback, I'm going to give you feedback. And it's going to be things that I like and things that I didn't. So either ask for actual feedback or don't ask me at all how I felt about your show. Stop fishing for compliments because it's not effective at all. It's an absolute waste of time.
Well, and I think, you know, if you're doing that, it might be valuable to examine why you're performing in the first place.
Yeah.
Because I think that when a performer comes on stage and they're doing it because they need something from the audience, it makes the act feel a little different and a little less powerful than if they're doing it as a gift to the audience, which is something I say all the time.
Right. Bowie, stop. Okay. Thank you.
the concern I always have with the asking, oh, did you like the show? Did you like the show afterwards? Isn't so much, I mean, sometimes that's valuable for a spectator because then they say yes and they have a better memory of the show. And so if that's why you're doing it, and you know what you're doing, there's something interesting there of like reinforcing that people enjoy the show or just wanting something to say, because sometimes receiving compliments is very uncomfortable. If you're a Carissa Hendricks, then it is very uncomfortable. And so being like, oh, you enjoyed it, sometimes can just be like a way of filling social space. But if you're saying that because you really need that feedback to fulfill you, that could be concerning. The most concerning thing for me is the performers that go, did you like the show? Did you like the show? Did you like the show? Everyone's going to say yes, because that is the social conditioning. That is the appropriate social agreement everyone has entered into, everyone's been trained to participate in since their childhood. And then the performer uses that feedback to deny helpful critique.
Right.
So often someone will ask me for notes. I will start giving them notes. And I will be interrupted during one note with someone saying, well, everyone loved the show.
Yeah.
Okay. Then don't. I mean,
then you don't need me. You don't need my feedback. If everyone loved the show, you're perfect in every way.
Yeah.
And don't need me. Good luck.
Yeah. And that's very, very dangerous. So let's kind of get into talking a bit about sort of that mentality, this mentality of like a lot of people ask for feedback and then will interrupt you as you give feedback. There is a good way to do that and a bad way to do that. So primarily when someone's giving you notes, it's often valuable to let those settle in over the course of a couple of days before developing a hard opinion on them. One of the things we've said in a previous podcast is that often someone will give you a note, or a few people will, and you won't agree with the note. But if you notice people bringing stuff up about one spot in your show over and over again, doesn't really matter if the note is valuable to you. They've noticed a space in the act where there's something missing or there's something problematic. And that information alone can be useful. So I personally write down everything anyone says constantly. If I interrupt your note giving to give you information, that's different. Often I'll ask for clarification. So someone will give me a note. Well, I think that, you know, the oranges have to be smaller. Okay, why? I think that's fine to ask, why do you think that? To ask for more information if you feel like the critique is non-specific. And often you have to be careful about the way you do that, because that makes people feel shut down, or it makes them feel often that like you're denying their critique. But asking for more clarity in people's notes is really valuable. I think that's totally fine. Or giving them more information, like something they might not have noticed, where if they go, oh, you should do this. And then you can go, well, that only happened in this show. So, you know, that's fine. I don't necessarily need notes about that, because normally I don't have an elephant I have to work around, or normally I'm performing on a stage and not standing in a pile of sand. Like, I get feedback like that all the time where it's venue specific.
I used to, like, when I produced Lemons in my bar show, there used to be a bunch of magicians. It was like once every show, the magician would come up and be like, hey, I have a really good joke for you. When you produce that lemon, go, when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. But then there was also no like addendum to, oh, and then produce lemonade or anything. There was also nothing. It was just, hey, I have this great joke for you that I've heard forever. You should say it, because clearly you've never thought about it. And my response every time was, thank you. I will write that down.
Yeah.
I will not write that down, because it's a terrible note. But where they were just wanting to give like some sort of feedback. But at the same time, it's like, okay, I encourage you to watch my act and then say, yes, I have this idea, because maybe one of your ideas is actually really great, and you've given me something that's very useful. So I'm going to encourage you in that moment. Like, thank you very much for giving me that note. Wonderful. I'm going to listen to everything. And then, like you said, take a couple of days to just sort of absorb things and question it and go from there. But when you're receiving critique, in that moment, it's not about you. Mm-hmm. It's about the information you're getting. And so as soon as you start to get defensive and get worried about the critique that you're being given and maybe take it personally, is where that critique is no longer valuable.
Absolutely. And it's tough, because you're looking someone in the eye and you're feeling like perhaps they're talking about you and not necessarily your act. So again, going back to that, you are not your work. Giving yourself some emotional distance to recognize that that person's not talking about you, or at least they shouldn't be. They're doing a good job with the critique. Mm-hmm. They're talking about the act. And, you know, even in Kayla's example, maybe maybe what people were picking up on, I doubt this, but maybe what people are picking up on is that there's a beat there where there could be a joke.
There was literally no beat.
Yeah, that's why I'm
there
saying.
There was literally nothing. It was the worst feedback I've ever received. There was literally, it was just a bunch of magicians that were like, I want to participate. Mm-hmm. And that was it. There was not even, it wasn't even always the same, like, oh, at this spot. It wasn't even always the same spot. It was like, oh, I see a lemon and I know a joke.
That
was it. Yeah, there was no point.
Yeah, well, so I think, like, recognizing what Kayla said here about how sometimes people just want to connect is also really valuable, because sometimes people will come up and this is a sequence I get asked a lot, where someone will go, whose trick is that? And it's something I created. And I'll go, oh, actually, that's mine. Oh, who did the writing? I did. Okay, who coached it? I did. It's my routine. And it's my prop. I built it. And then – because I know what the conversation – it feels like the conversation was going to be, where can I buy that? Mm-hmm. And now that they can't buy it, the conversation becomes, oh, I have some ideas for you. Because there's sort of like a backpedaling. And so when I receive those notes, I'm not quite as worried about listening and receiving all of those notes, because you can recognize in those moments that that person was coming up to you to ask – basically to know where to buy that trick, and now they right. can't. The other time when sometimes you can kind of shut down a critique a little bit is when someone's coming up to you and you can tell that they just want to talk to you.
Yeah.
They just want to say hi. They want to get on your level. There's sort of a status thing where when you've performed, especially if it's for other performers, you have a higher status. And a lot of the time if people, especially if they really like your act, they're going to come up to you afterwards and sometimes just offer you a little bit of something to try and get on your level. And I am guilty of that. Mm-hmm. I will do that once in a while. I still do that. And I'm always super embarrassed when I do it, where I'll be hanging out with people and I'll be like, I want to be that person's friend. And then I'll try to offer them a joke they didn't ask for. And I have to go back through and go.
Yeah.
And I can tell I'm doing it because I find myself like waiting to jump in on the conversation. And luckily, you know, I hang out with people that talk fast enough that I can't jump in and embarrass myself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everybody does that.
Yeah, I think if we want to start to go on like how to give effective critique, then one of the things is never to just go up to somebody and go, got something for you.
Yeah.
There is a magician that in two different shows we did together, he like ran up to me while I was basically walking off of the stage and was like, all right, I got two notes. At no point did I ever ask for his feedback. But even if I did, or if he had a couple of ideas he wanted to share with me in the interest of making the routine better, which is great and wonderful, that is not the time. So if you are going to give an effective critique, the first thing you have to do is know when to do it. Mm-hmm. So one thing that's always good is to approach someone and say, hey, I have a couple of thoughts. If you would like them, here's where to find me. Or, you know, we could chat later, chat tomorrow, whatever. Like offer somebody the availability to ask for the critique. It's so much better to let somebody know that you have information and they can ask for it than to come at them and sort of jump at somebody with information. Maybe they're not ready for it. Maybe it's a new piece and they're just like, I just don't even know where to, like, there's a lot of reasons somebody is not ready for you to give them critique at that moment. So to offer somebody the out of asking or not asking is really effective. But then while you're giving that critique, you have to start positively. Mm-hmm. So you can't just come at somebody and go, I have notes and nothing about your act that I liked. I only have things that were terrible and I need to tell you about them. Mm-hmm. You need to go, all right, here are a couple of things that you can change that are great. And then here are a couple of things you can change. I really like that language of like, I like this and here's something that you could change, as opposed to I liked it and didn't like it. That's much more negative. So if you come at – if you say like I like this and think something that can change, I think that's a little bit better.
Yeah. I also think that what you're talking about is great, this use of specific language. So things you can change is really valuable. I also really try to stick to successful and unsuccessful because liking something is often it's a value statement about that comes from you. I liked this, which is fine if that's what you want to communicate. Hey, I loved you. I liked this. Mm. But if you want to be offering valuable critique, you know, kind of what Kayla's talking about is that whole like shit sandwich where it's like you say something nice and then you say something shitty and then you say something nice. I don't love that method, but I love what it's trying to accomplish. So my way of doing that is to start by saying something that communicates to the artist that I understand the intention of their work. Mm. So I will go, I enjoy this really specific aesthetic that you've created. I think the level of precision you have with your movement and your understanding, whatever it is great, right? So again, this is about my appreciation. But what I'm really trying to establish isn't that it's good or bad. I'm trying to establish that I noticed it and I appreciate it and I get it. So that now when I go, have you thought about, or I don't find this as successful, or maybe this is something you can change, which is Kayla's language, then I've already established I get what you're trying to do. Now, sometimes I don't get what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And that initial comment will signal to the artist, I don't get it. And we'll be able to start from there. Well, they go, oh, that's what you saw? And then I won't offer the critique because I don't get it. And often I don't get it. And it's totally fine for me to not get something. People don't get other people's work. Art is a form of communication. So it's reasonable to be like, I took something totally different from that. But being able to start from there, it's the same kind of intention as the shit sandwich.
Right.
But I feel like it's more authentic because you're not like digging through trying to invent compliments. You know, and I really think that whether or not you're going to go up to someone after a show and give them a set of notes, you should be watching everything critically. I think that's very important. And I don't mean you should be a critical person. That's different.
What?
Watching work with a critical eye, whether it's film or visual art or dance or magic, any form of theater, anytime somebody made deliberate choices about how to present a certain kind of information or color or props or whatever it is, anytime that happens, if you watch that critically, what it does for you as an individual is that it teaches you about your own aesthetic and preferences. So things that you enjoy and why you enjoy them, and it trains your eye to see precision. It trains your eye to understand choices. It helps you become immersed in the vocabulary of movement, and it helps you get to be a better artist. So even if you're never, ever going to walk up to that performer and give them a note, mentally watching actively is still valuable. Now, that doesn't mean I do that for every show. I'm going to be honest. Last night in the parlor, I was having such a good time. I just turned my critique brain off and sure. I was like, I'm going to just enjoy this because this is beautiful.
Yeah.
But anytime – that's a choice I can make, right? I can choose to turn that part of my brain off and just enjoy it the way a spectator does. But most of the time, I'd say 95% of the time, if I'm watching something, I'm critiquing it. I have notes. So if you see me in your show, feel free to ask me for notes because I can pretty much guarantee I have some. Mm-hmm. Alba, the first time I saw her perform, I had no notes because I was so busy enjoying it. I just turned my brain off and then had to go to the Owl Bar at the castle and like come up with stuff. You know, go through my memory and go, oh, here's an idea. Because she specifically wanted notes because Elba is amazing. So I think that's really important to recognize this idea that you shouldn't just be watching actively because the performer might ask you for notes. This is really for you. This is a selfish practice. This should be training you about the kinds of stuff you like so that you can make your work a better representation of who you actually are.
So now talking about asking for feedback. I think when you're first starting out in magic, you should ask everybody for feedback. You should ask your audience. You should ask magicians that see the show. You should send video to magicians, all of that. I totally understand taking in a lot of feedback. I have a problem with a group of magicians throwing feedback at a wall and seeing what sticks. I have a lot of problems with there being too many hands in the cookie jar, too many cooks in the kitchen type situation. The more – because you're never going to get an agreement. People are never going to agree, oh, yes, this was something that I liked and this was something that I want to change. They're never going to agree on the same things, which means that you never can figure out what's right for you. For me, I found
magicians that I wanted to be like. So after looking at, you know, developing a critical eye and watching magicians that I really, really loved, I asked those magicians, hi, could you please help me? I would like your help. I need help. Help. Mm-hmm. And they helped. But the reason that worked and the reason that made me better is because I wanted to do what they were doing and I respected them as a performer. But if you're just throwing critique up and hoping to see like, oh yeah, I guess this works, I don't think you can actually get better. I think you have to figure out what is the type of performer you want to be and then seek out those performers for help.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I have a big – this is like a really big thing that magicians do in LA. I love the goal behind it. I just don't understand why – magicians are going to get together with like 20 other magicians and perform a routine for them and then sit there for a good 20 minutes and listen to the feedback from the group. I don't think this is viable. First of all, magicians are rarely a good judge of good magic because magicians often want good magic for them. They want to be fooled. They want some difficult sleight to be in there. So you always trying to find that group of performers that can give you actual critique that is good for you is very difficult. But when you're just like, I'm just going to show up to this giant group of people and perform a routine and hopefully get my feedback, I think it's more stressful. You can't get an answer. I think it's so much more difficult, at least in my experience, performing in these groups regularly. I think it's every once in a while, it's fine. Go get, but to rely on a group of magicians to give you feedback like that, I think is actually more detrimental than it is good because you're never actually getting something valuable. You then have to sift through everything you saw and be like, oh God, I hope that one of these answers is right for me. Mm. And I just don't have the time to try out every single piece of feedback that somebody's given me. I need to grab the performers that I like the best and go from there.
I think this is a reflection of Kayla's "I use a Dremel tool" comment, right? Like, I think, you know, I think this is very much because
clearly on purpose.
Because what that environment is it is the heavy dutiest form of sandpaper. So what you can get out of that is if you're just starting out, then they will fix big things. But that kind of learning environment is not well suited for people who want to develop a different level of polish often. Because when you know, that kind of refined eye is not going to manifest in a room like that. So mm-hmm. I think part of why Kayla has a total distaste for this, I feel like I'm talking for you, but
it's that's fine. Please do.
Is because of your, you know, Kayla uses a Dremel tool. She's like, nope, I want the most effective, efficient way to get my show as good as I can. And I'm not, you know, Kayla doesn't want to go through the layers of sandpaper, which is totally fine.
I, though, like, even if I look back to when I was just starting out, I actually still found that this large group feedback did more harm than it did good.
Really?
Because it never sent me down a good path. It sent me down 15 different paths, and it actually took me longer to figure out which path was right or which path worked best for me in that moment. So because you're going to get, say you're doing an ambitious card routine and you send it out to 30 magicians, every single magician is going to give you a different piece of information. And then you have to go, okay, well, magician one said this, magician two said something that was contradicting them, so I'll just do both. Mm-hmm. But then that ends up making it more convoluted, and I haven't actually seen success necessarily come out of these types of groups. And that's across the board. I have not had success in this. I have just never seen success. To me, now, mind you, I'm talking sort of from my perspective. Maybe you totally disagree, and that's fine. You could have a large group. That's great. When I say large group, I mean 15 or more people. I have my core group of like 5 or 6 magicians that I'll send stuff to or ask for feedback immediately, you know, from a show. And that's great because then I can better sift through like, okay, I like this, I don't like this, et cetera. But when you have such a large group, I don't think there's any – you're actually just – you're not narrowing down the answer. All you're doing is – being given a bunch of stuff and you're not actually being able to decide. You're basically being given a table's worth of a buffet, but you still don't understand what you like to eat.
That's fair.
So if you're being given all of this food, you can't eat all of the food in one meal. You have to go, oh, okay, well, I can try a little bit of each, but I still don't understand what I like. As opposed to, oh, okay, I know that I like something savory, so I'm going to go over here. Like, it, I think it's much more beneficial to seek out a couple, you know, smaller group, 5 or 6 magicians that you respect as performers, and then get feedback from them. I think that's way more effective than getting – than a larger group.
Yeah, I mean, there's a time – I think what I'm rubbing up against is that there's a time when a big group of people is valuable, and I think that's in the creation phase. Because having lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of ideas when you're like, I want to do a generic thing, then but I have this little idea. But when – I think you're right. When you're – when the act is ready to get actual critique, it's more valuable to – hand it to people who you trust, who have similar aesthetics, or at least understand what you're trying to do. Because every time you get a set of notes, you're going to have to look at every single one of those notes and go, is this for me? Is this for me? Is this for me? And I think you and I are both really fast at that now, but that's an acquired skill.
I think your sandpaper analogy, where it works really well when you know how to use sandpaper. Does that make sense? Like, mm-hmm. If you are a new performer and you have absolutely no idea how this sandpaper works, you shouldn't start big. You should actually start small.
Because, that's a very good point.
Right? Because bigger, coarser sandpaper takes away more and does damage quicker.
Yep.
So if you're a newer performer, and I'm not, I don't mean, oh my God, I almost just threw my laptop across the room. That's how passionate I am about sandpaper.
So passionate.
If you're a newer performer, you should start with asking for smaller changes, because I think that's how – like the smaller sandpaper, because then you're not taking away too much to where then you need to add back information. So if it's a newer routine but you are a more seasoned sandpaper user, I think you can start off with a coarser piece of sandpaper. You can take away more because you know when to stop. But if you're a newer performer, you don't know when to stop, and therefore you could actually end up ruining your stuff. My personal experience with this is that before I got ripped to shreds by Christian and Catalina, I was taking feedback from so many people that it actually did damage to my act. I actually did more damage to me as a performer because I didn't know who to believe. I didn't know who was right, and I didn't know who I was. So I definitely didn't know how to function and make choices for me. I was just taking everything that was being thrown at my way and going, I'll do it all. And that was bad. So Christian and Kat were able to, with their experience, take away much more of the grossness and then give me a more refined piece of pine. That's a wood. I was going with the sandpaper.
I liked it.
Thank you.
That's great.
Does that make sense?
It totally does. And, you know, like, to basically take our metaphor and just extrapolate it to the point where it's completely ridiculous. You know, you know, this is – we're talking about a piece of art. Sandpaper and a piece of art, a piece of wood, a piece of pine. And you're right. Like, you can – because, you know, a big group critique is so much, I think it can polish off – some of what makes you interesting, some of the details, mm-hmm. right? That is, I totally agree with that. There can be, and I think also that metaphor can be extended to talk about the kinds of people who offer you feedback. So one of the things I've experienced is that I prefer to take feedback from people who I respect, but aren't so far idolized in my mind that I will just take what they say without considering it.
Yeah, right.
I have had some people come and give me notes who I adore, mm-hmm. and I have learned to write those down and give myself even more time before reviewing those notes, because my instinct when somebody I love, somebody whose work I just really admire, gives me notes is, you're 100% right, I'm going to do everything you say. And that can be equally damaging because, you know, you have to be the filter through which these choices are constantly being made, and you can just so easily turn into someone else's show. We see that all the time. We see that all the time. There's lots of people who are full-time, you know, mentors basically in magic. And it's not uncommon for them to create tiny clones of themselves. I'm working very hard to make sure that London, the 10-year-old I mentor, does not become a Carissa Hendrick clone. I think it's a little easier for me because I do character work. So I often have to consider how other people who mm-hmm. actually live inside me might do something. So it's very easy for me to look at London and go, okay, what's your character? And let's stay within this. But often I'll want something for her and mm-hmm. I'll have to stop myself and go, what do you think here? Because, you know, there's a power imbalance between me and London because she's 10.
Right.
So recognizing that power imbalance between people giving and receiving critique is also going to affect the grit of sandpaper. This metaphor has been just stretched out super thin.
I love it. Thin, like a piece of sandpaper.
That is correct. Oh my goodness, it's so great. So when you're critiquing people, you can reference a few different things. Kayla and I are going to talk about something that might be a little bit controversial.
What?
The fact that when you step on stage, everything we see and hear is part of the act. So if you have a squeaky voice, if you have weird facial hair.
I see where you're going.
If you are an unusual looking person, these are now part of the show. And this is very controversial because often you find that people don't want to talk about that. They don't want to talk about, hey, you know, you're dressing weird or you're a weird looking person and you need to incorporate in the act or comment or something. And I find that really unfortunate because as soon as you walk on stage, everything you do, stay, the way you walk, how you are, this is all part of the content of the piece. And so it's all subject to critique. Now, whether or not you can change those things is not always 100%. Right. But they're all part of the conversation. If you're critiquing someone, I should be able to say, hey, you're 7 feet tall. And so you're an intimidating figure. And we should be able to talk about that as part of the critique and about how that affects your act. But people tend to be very sensitive about the way they look or the way they dress or mm-hmm. their insane, ridiculous facial hair that suddenly they feel very attacked. And we talked about how you are not your work. But in this particular way, your work is coming from you. And so those notes are also about you in real life.
I have a friend who performs like improv and sketch, and he quickly realized because he's tall and a little bit menacing looking that he can't play the bad guy in a scene because it feels real.
Ah.
And it's no longer funny. You're actually creeped out by him. So instead he plays like the very, you know, he goes for the slightly more buffoon like characters, but he like can't hold a gun in a scene because it feels real.
Yeah, and it's not comedy anymore.
Right, and that's just he went, "Oh, how do I come across on stage just by standing there?" Oh, okay. I should be careful of that. Which I think is really brilliant. Chris Kender once did a talk and in that talk he was like, "If you are performing, you need to lose weight." It was actually a really interesting talk, and like I'm all opinion aside, his talk on it was, if all that I can focus on is your inability to move because of your size, you need to lose weight. It was actually just a really interesting perspective from his point because he also had just lost a ton of weight. And so he was like, you know, it was really helpful because now I'm not sweating constantly and it's not the only thing the audience is able to pay attention to me. It's not hindering my ability to walk up and down the stairs on the stage. It's just a really interesting perspective, like, that it really does matter how you come across mm-hmm. to the audience. The audience is going to catch you sweat very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Both metaphorically and physically.
Well, and that information in the show becomes, you know, we as an audience want to feel confident in knowing that everything that's happening is a choice. And when something like that happens, mm-hmm. we're not certain if it's a choice. It becomes distracting. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, you just have to make choices. And some of that can be done as simply as change the costume so they don't notice or, you know, what are you doing? So the reason I bring this up is because in my real life, you will never hear me like make fun of the way someone looks.
Yeah.
Neither Kayla and I. It's ridiculous. But, when you are on stage – that is going to be part of the conversation I have about my critique of your work. And if I'm talking to other artists, because I think artists, you watch something with a critical eye and then you want to discuss it with other artists. And my concern is always, because we're women, that is being seen as being catty or that is being seen as being cruel or whatever. And I just want to call that crap out right now and say, if I don't like your hair in your show, and you happen to be a woman. I am not being catty. It is a genuine critique of the work.
Yeah. Is your hair unkempt and therefore is it falling in your face and you have to move it out of your way a lot? This was a note that I got because I used to think I needed to wear my hair down, but I would touch it all the time because I don't like wearing my hair down. Mm-hmm. So I got the note, do something with your hair. And now I wear it up. And I don't think about it anymore. So, like, that was a critique of my hair because it was distracting to the audience because I was distracted. So, is your hair distracting? Is your costume maybe unflattering or maybe slightly see-through with the lights that you don't think about that? Because stage lighting is very different than normal lighting. So, all of a sudden, can I see through parts of your costume you didn't know that I could see through before? These are all things that become a distraction away from the actual performance. So, what is it that you want the audience to be actually watching and paying attention to, and what are they remembering? So if they're remembering, oh, I saw this performer sweat stains pretty harshly, well, that's not a thing you want them to remember. I mean, maybe it is, but if that's not what you want them to remember, then you need to address that immediately.
Yeah. Are you a nervous weirdo character? Well, then that's mm-hmm. a different conversation. Or if that's who you are, can you weave that into the piece in some way? But I get so frustrated when I feel like I'm being judged for speaking openly about someone's work, because I am so careful. We both are so careful to never like be jerks or like judge people mm-hmm. outside of the context of entertainment, because your appearance, the choices you make for how you look are mm-hmm. part of the information the audience is receiving. It's part of the act.
Yeah, I say a lot in real life that I think anybody of any body shape can wear a jumpsuit.
Totally.
I truly believe that. But on stage is a different story. Not everyone can wear a jumpsuit. But also not everyone can wear a dress. I'm one of those people. Not everyone can pull off a suit. Not everyone can pull off the skinny jeans and skinny tie. Oh, Lord, I hate that look so much. If you are still wearing skinny jeans and a skinny tie on stage as a magician, genuinely rethink all of your choices your entire life. Like literally from birth to now, think about every choice you've made, about which train to take, about which movie to go to, all of it. And then
do you even
stop
have right
wearing
now?
A skinny tie.
What are you – have you eaten the right food this morning?
No, you haven't, because you're still wearing a skinny tie. No. Anyway.
So this is all – this is – you know, I wanted to bring this up partially because this is a women's issue. Because what? Well, because if women comment on the appearance of other women – we're immediately being catty because we live in a society where women are taught that we're in competition with each other and we're supposed to be the prettiest and our value is wrapped up in being pretty. This is not a conversation about being pretty. This is a conversation about being precise. And I think that's the thing I really want to focus on, is that when I see someone on stage, anyone, male, female, anything else, non-binary, I want to know that you know what you look like, and I want that to come across immediately. And it's so frustrating when I'm just speaking openly with other performers about a piece of work and talking about slights and this and that. And then I say something like, well, and also, you know, that's not a flattering outfit. And now I'm catty. Screw you. Screw you. I'm a professional performer. I am an artist. I am talking about the work. And it, I just am... Stop it. Like, it's fine. But also recognize when you step on stage... you're opening yourself up to that people are looking at you. You put yourself literally above them to look at you, and they might have some opinions, and they might not all be great opinions. I deal with that. Kayla deals with that. Everybody deals with that. Now, that's not to say you have to be sexy. We're the last people on the face of the planet that are going to tell you have to be sexy. You just have to be specific.
Yeah, you just have to – the audience wants to know, like you said, that you've made the choices, and if I'm distracted by a way that you look or something that clearly was not a choice, if I'm distracted by it and you are not self-aware, then I'm really distracted by it. And now I'm not paying attention to what you wanted me to pay attention to. So as you're looking at your own stuff and as you're hearing feedback, if somebody goes, well, you look like a frumpy mess, an actual piece of critique I've gotten, not recently, I hope, then I have to go, okay, well, why do I look like a frumpy mess? Oh, let's fix it. And then I don't look like a frumpy mess anymore. I look like I made a choice in my costuming. Like, that's way more interesting than looking like a frumpy mess. And now people are paying attention to what I want them to actually pay attention to. So as you're getting critique, if somebody is critiquing you on your appearance, really pay attention to that, because that I think is sometimes more valuable than the actual critique on the work, on like the trick that you're doing. I think if you look distracting, then what you're doing for the trick does not matter at all.
Absolutely. I mean, all bodies are beautiful in their own way. And
no, you didn't have to, like, I see what you're saying, but you don't have to say the butt, because
yeah, all bodies are beautiful in their own way.
But it doesn't matter, because if you're on stage, you're up for judgment.
You're up for judgment.
Just flatter yourself as best as possible.
Absolutely. Exactly. And you know, there are clothing that suit people of different body types. Mm-hmm. And it's the amount of times I see both men and women squeeze themselves into something three sizes too small.
Would it be like skinny jeans and a skinny tie?
Like, yeah. Oh my God. It's gone back. It's also like sandpaper. You know, because with sandpaper, you have to sand, or people who wear things that are like really, really oversized. And again.
Oh, yeah, you see that too. Yeah.
Yeah, this is, but if that's your character, if these are deliberate choices and the audience can see these are deliberate mm-hmm. choices, then that's fine. It's just about making sure these are deliberate choices. But it's so common for me to see someone wearing clothes that don't fit them and it doesn't feel like a deliberate choice. Or, you know, we were in the parlor about a couple months ago. Somebody wore this crushed blue thing suit jacket, and it was never referenced. It wasn't part of a character. It just looked so distracting. And I get where that impulse comes from, because for men there aren't a lot of choices on how to differentiate themselves. They're all wearing suits, and so you see a big blue weird suit and you go, they'll remember me if I wear the big blue crazy
yep.
crushed suit. But it's not. Don't do it.
I saw a performer recently that was wearing this a completely white suit, which actually looked good when he was standing. But then he sat down. He actually straddled a bar stool when he was doing everything. And it became really bunched up in very wrong places. And that's one thing that, like, if you watched a video of yourself performing, or if anybody ever actually gave him the critique of saying, hey, try sitting this way. Oh, you need to sit this way for this specific routine? Well, let's get some pants that can allow you to do that without showing us off more about your character than we needed to know. If you catch my drift.
I caught your drift.
Well done.
I think everyone caught your drift.
Terrible.
Thank you. Yeah. So just to kind of recap, you are not your work. That's the most, I think, important thing is you are not your work. Both when you're giving and receiving feedback, it's important to recognize that people mm-hmm. are not their show. Everyone has a bad day. It doesn't mean if you have a bad show, it doesn't mean you're a bad performer. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. You know, learn from your mistakes is the most important thing. If you have a weird show, really do some soul searching and figure out why it's weird. Trying to be specific about your comments when you're offering critique is really, really important. And recognizing that getting into that feedback, you need to be invited to give that feedback is really, really important. Don't just walk up to someone and go, I have notes. Here they are. It's fine to go, hey, I noticed some stuff. Let me know if you have time. In Australia, there was this young man who was competing for, was about to go to compete for FISM, and I saw his full show. And my method was, and I loved his FISM piece that he did in the show, but was not the biggest fan of the whole show, and came up to him afterwards and I went, hey, thank you. I have a couple pages of ideas. Let me know if you want to have coffee. Because that's how many ideas I had. And I was like, I should let him know. And then he, to his credit, he and I went for coffee and I pulled out two full pages of notes and I watched his eyes like glaze over. And so then what I did was Juan Esteban Varela, the guy who does
what
the
words did you just say?
Juan Esteban Varela. He does the magic for blind people.
You did not say words.
I'm doing my best. I am not good at names from Spanish.
Got it.
He had given me a couple pages of notes, and so I showed this performer like, oh, these are notes I've received. They're also two pages. So I think it, and then he was like, can I borrow a piece of paper to write stuff down? He was very great. And then we actually went through his FISM act for about an hour. I had him do it over and over and over again. But you know, he was very receptive. But I think if I would have gone up to him right after a show and gone, here are two pages, that would have been
right.
a nightmare, and I would have been a horrible person. But to, you know, I was like, this is a thing to do over coffee. So giving people the opportunity to get those notes when they're most comfortable, sitting on them for a while. If you don't like someone's solution, maybe trying to dig into that and figuring out, you know, it may be that you don't like their solution, but if people keep pointing out a space, there might be a problem in that space. And if you're smart and you work hard, you can find it. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
I mean, just if you're going to offer critique, like offer the handshake and let somebody reciprocate the handshake on their own terms. Mm-hmm. And then make the handshake pleasant. Like, don't dead fish it.
Yeah. Great.
That was how – that's – I think that makes a lot of sense to everyone. And then – I hate the dead fish handshake so much. Yeah. Just remember everything that we already said.
Also, let's all try – just as a challenge, even if you don't want to keep this for the rest of your life, for the next few shows you see, try not to use any lazy words when talking about the show afterwards. If the performer asks – did you like the show or what did you like about the show? Try to be specific.
Yeah.
Try to say things you actually mean. If you just say, it was good, it was fun, we had a fine time, everything, it was interesting. Like, these are words that have no content in them. And if the show was terrible, they are potentially harmful. Now, nobody wants to finish a show and someone goes, actually, I hated it. But you can say things that are more specific, or basically someone comes out of the show, you go, oh, you know, my favorite thing is, hey, what'd you think? I think that's a longer conversation. That is my new favorite thing to say. And I know that probably comes across as a little bit mean, but that's what I mean to say. I mean to say, this is not an environment where I can tell you the truth.
I think that as well as that challenge, let's all pledge to stop asking, did you have fun or what did you think? And the question is, I would like your feedback.
Yeah. What feedback
do you have? If you have feedback, I would like to hear it.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, you might not want to hear it from that specific performer. And therefore, if you are that specific performer, don't offer feedback.
Yeah.
Again, extend the hand for a handshake. And if the other person doesn't take it, don't be insulted. And just leave it at that. We did it.
We did it. Thank you so much for joining us on this fourth attempt at the critique episode for Shazam. And remember,
judgy, judgy, yummy, fudgy, take critique or you'll get pudgy. We wrote that.
We wrote that.
That was a thing we teased at the beginning. And we wrote that down.
And we thought it was great.
Yep.
Okay, so
that's how we're ending it.
Okay. This podcast is funded in part through support from the Endowment and Development Fund of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. Thank you so much for helping us out, you guys. We really appreciate it.